Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talked to Megan Stacey of the London Free Press. Now, a Guelph Politicast about London, you say? Well, why not? That's the fascinating thing about these municipal elections, isn't it? We live just a few miles down the road, we have so much in common as comparator cities, but politically, we look like we're worlds apart, and there's no better time to look at why than in the midst of an election campaign. The London difference is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. It's a nice election we have here, isn't it? We've got 30-some-odd competitors across all the council races, and the most discussed issues seem to be who's not getting signs and if Facebook trolls are too trollish this time around. We've got only two mayoral candidates in this election, which may speak to the contentment or apathy of the Guelph electorate, depending on your point of view. Meanwhile, down in London, they've got 14 people running for mayor. And this comes after the 2014 election, where 11 out of 14 incumbent city councillors were defeated and a new mayor was elected. This was to wash the stink of scandal off of City Hall, and not just local scandal, but national scandal. We'll get into the long-form version of that in the podcast, but for the short-form version, let's quote from Megan Stacey's own article posted on September 8th, "Elusive L-word, leadership hangs over London mayoral race." Quote, "Distrust of politicians isn't exclusive to London, but its recent track record at the top thrust London under a harsh national spotlight and did nothing to inspire voter confidence. Mayor Matt Brown's affair with council colleague Maureen Cassidy, a fraud conviction for then-Mayor Joe Fontana, the criminal charges that dog the husband of Anne-Marie Decaco Best, who is the city's longest-serving mayor, and Diane Haskett's refusal to issue a gay pride proclamation in 1995, unquote. So that's a lot to overcome for the electorate and a lot to undo in one election, but London voters will have to make those tough decisions on how best to guide their city for the next 4 years. In the interest of curiosity, I reached out to Megan Stacey to talk about all the things that make London politics different and some of the things that make them the same as Guelph politics. So on this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast, I talked to Megan Stacey about London's political scandals, plural, and what people are talking about this election cycle, and what the most important issues are to voters and candidates. We also talk about London's experiment in electoral reform and the ranked choice voting that's being used for the first time in London and only London, and we talk about the struggles of a daily newspaper in 2018 to cover 14 wards and 14 mayoral candidates. So I caught up with Megan Stacey by phone last week from the Free Press office. Okay, so Megan Stacey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
First of all, I think for those of us in Guelph who are looking at a mayoral race with just the two candidates, it might be interesting for them to know that in London you have over a dozen mayoral candidates.
That's right. We've actually got 14 people running. I think a lot of them are fairly described as fringe candidates, but still nice to have a crowded field. I think it ups everyone's game a little bit.
I don't know how much you've looked beyond sort of the London's borders, but I've just been looking at, you know, Kitchener and Waterloo area, and it seemed like this year there wasn't a lot of interest in pursuing the mayor's chair, and I'm not sure if it was just because it's kind of like we were kind of electioned out after what happened earlier this year, or people are just generally satisfied with how things are going municipally, but. When you look to London and you have 14 competitors, what's going on in London that so many people are out to be its mayor?
That's really interesting, Adam, especially that you look to the other communities. I did look back, you know, from previous races, and we usually tend to have about this number. I think in 2014 we had 15, and in 2010 we had 13 or 14, so not unprecedented for London. But, you know, it is kind of interesting because I talked to a number of experts back before the nomination period closed, and, you know, in general for our ward races, the numbers were quite low, and, you know, a lot of folks are saying that people just aren't interested in putting themselves through the grind of, you know, running and serving in public office. But I don't know, London seems to have seems to have the opposite effect. I guess a lot of people are willing to put themselves out there. And I know you've probably heard a little bit about some of our contentious issues. The rapid transit project is a real hot topic, I guess you'd say, and definitely very controversial. So I think that does drive some people. We have a lot of anti-BRT candidates running and sort of running in a lot of cases just on that as a sort of single issue candidate, I'll kill the BRT. So I think that drives some of it, especially when you're looking at the top job. And in London, we do have, I don't want to say issues, but the past few terms, there have been a lot of mayors that have been associated with a high-profile scandal.
Right.
So I think that kind of can galvanize people and motivate people a little bit, too, to say, I'm going to be this candidate that will bring integrity or, reverse the trend that voters may be seeing or maybe a little bit cynical about in terms of what's going on in the mayor's office.
Well, that's what's interesting is because in 2014, it was 11 out of 14 of the councillors that were flipped.
That's right. Yeah, I think it was a historic turnover at that point. It was huge. And so we had this this voting block, the Fontana Eight, as it was called, the mayor and seven of his allies, and quite a few of them were turfed. And it's interesting, we've actually seen three of those so-called Fontana Eight members who were defeated in the 2014 election coming back for a run now in 2018. So, I mean, three out of eight, almost half. It's really interesting. We sort of had this swell of people saying, we've got to get those folks out of office. But I have been hearing, quite a little bit of sort of similar sentiment around this council, right? It kind of leads you to ask, okay, you didn't like the last council, you didn't like this council, which was very different, right? City building, a lot of younger folks, political rookies, sort of that progressive mindset. And now a lot of people seem dissatisfied with their accomplishments. So it's kind of an interesting mix now where you've got a lot of incumbents running for re-election, but you do kind of have that re-emergence of that Fontana Eight or, just political names that are familiar to Londoners. So I guess we're really going to see on October 22nd or maybe later, where people land and what they're looking for. It's going to be interesting.
Well, maybe we can just give people who may not be as steeped in London politics as you and I are, just a bit of context in terms of why Mayor Joe Fontana was so controversial and why there was that tremendous, I guess, wave election back in 2014.
Sure, yeah, that's right. So Mayor Joe Fontana, who was a former MP, during his time, when he was mayor, he was convicted of fraud, falsifying a document, and breach of trust. It related to a payment made for his son's wedding, and it was back when he was MP. So obviously that's a big deal for voters and, for his colleagues. And so he subsequently resigned after he was convicted. And I think it's fair to say that cast a little bit of a pall over, the mayor's office and potentially that voting block as well. So, certainly that I think would kind of be the motivating factor. And I was actually chatting with one of the members of this so-called Fontana Eight who's launching a comeback this run, and he really took offense to me calling it a voting block, saying we didn't always vote together, I didn't vote on every issue. But I think the crux of the matter is that it was Fontana and his allies who were able to push through an agenda as you need to do, and you need to have those allies when you're mayor. But anyways, I'm a little bit off topic there, Adam, sorry.
No, it's interesting to hear it talk about, because you hear a lot of the same discussions here in Guelph about the quote-unquote Farbridge Seven. Karen Farbridge was mayor 4 years ago, and she lost the last election. But you still hear about the Farbridge Seven or the Farbridge Block, and it just seems like, maybe people who are politically active or politically astute sort of find these conclaves in what is essentially supposed to be a nonpartisan arena, which is our municipal politics. But I guess we're so used to the team atmosphere of political parties that we kind of have to seek them out, whether that's the Farbridge Seven or the Fontana Eight.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, we hear time and time again how much people hate that idea of, you know, seeing the party politics at the local level. But yeah, a bit of a catch-22 because you've obviously got to have your allies. And, you know, in London, that means 8 votes.
Right.
If you are mayor in order to, you know, and it's not, I shouldn't call it an agenda. It's not necessarily about pushing your agenda through, but about bringing along, you know, your council colleagues to get things done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all agree that's what voters are looking for, progress, getting things done, you know, not constantly talking in circles, which Londoners really hate, as I will tell you based on the Twitter feedback as I'm live tweeting our meetings. Anyways, but yeah, it's sort of interesting to see, right? There's that distaste, but then people really also want, I mean, many leaders, but I think especially a leader in the top job who can bring people along and sort of get things accomplished. So,
right.
Interesting.
So we get Fontana, who is out because of the appearance of corruption, or I guess actual corruption, not least not as mayor, but as a former MP. And then we go into something a bit more salacious with the presently outgoing mayor, Matt Brown.
Yeah, that's right. So there was an interim mayor for a few months, but Mayor Matt Brown, who's not running again, as you mentioned, there was an affair between Brown and one of his council colleagues, then Deputy Mayor Maureen Cassidy. So I think, you know, that was disappointing for a lot of people because Brown had huge support. You know, he built up a war chest on his way to winning in 2014. And, he, you know, it was not a very close race by any measure. He was out, you know, very far in front. And he really campaigned, too, on that idea of bringing integrity back into the mayor's office and, you know, kind of closing that chapter on some of these scandals that had affected London and, you know, put the city in headlines. So, yeah, you definitely hear from a lot of voters, even from the ex-politicians and you know, experts who are saying that that affair and the news of that affair, you know, becoming public really disappointed a lot of people. And I think it's made voters maybe even a little more cynical than they were already. And we know the turnout rates already are not good. A lot of people just frankly don't care about municipal politics at all. So, yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, that you know, is more personal, but it's interesting to see kind of just how much voters are turned off. Or I guess I just see that element of, you know, the jaded voter and are people going to turn out at all. But that's why also I think we have such an interest, you know, in the leadership of the city and this idea of integrity or, you know, ethics in the top job. The very first mayoral debate in the city was I guess about 2 weeks ago, and it was so packed. It's at a local performance hall, Aeolian Hall, that I think seated just over 300, and it was so packed they were turning people away at the door. So to me, that was kind of a win, you know, to see so many interested Londoners who are coming out. And this was, you know, before the campaign really started heating up. So, you know, there's signs of life there, too. People do care who's going to lead their city.
And there's a great picture that was part of that coverage of what 14 mayoral candidates on a stage looks
that's
like.
That's right. Maybe Guelph voters are, maybe they're thinking twice about having more candidates. I have to tell you, listening to, there was only one who didn't show up for that debate. So 13 candidates altogether, you know, rotate through their spiels on the hot button issues. It gets a little bit cluttered, I guess.
Yeah. I did want to talk about a couple of the specific issues, just, you know, sort of scanning through your coverage. You mentioned the BRT earlier, which stands for Bus Rapid Transit. Can you describe a bit about what that is and maybe why it's so controversial?
Sure. Yes, it must be nice to be outside of the London bubble where you just don't care about BRT at all. But I know you folks are close to KW too, so you're not immune to the transit talk.
No.
So the Bus Rapid Transit project, it's a $500 million plan, so it'll be the biggest project in London's history. It's sort of in progress right now. So there's a transit assessment process, kind of like an EA that any big transit project has to go through. So essentially this council has endorsed it, signed off, and even had the final vote to say, you know, here are where the routes are going to go, and now it's going through this assessment process. So London's asking for contributions from senior levels of government to help pay for that project. City Hall's stake in the project is actually about $130 million, so not quite as big as that $500 million price tag.
Mm-hmm.
The province has already agreed to fund $170 million. That was under the Liberal government, so I think there are some whispers and fear or excitement, depending on who you are, that Doug Ford may change that a little bit. And then the federal government hasn't signed off on this project in particular, but has allocated enough transit cash, if you will, to London to make the project a reality. So it's rapid transit, obviously, bus rapid transit, and it's runs on sort of L and 7-shaped corridors that meet in the downtown. So it extends out to the north, east, south, and west sides of the city, but runs on those spines, right? So of course that doesn't hit every neighborhood.
Right.
It won't serve every single Londoner, but the idea is that you really draw development along those spines, and then the rest of our London Transit Commission buses, the local routes, if you will feed into those corridors. There's certainly a lot of debate over whether the price is worth it, whether the system will be effective. We have train tracks and trains that are constantly blocking traffic, especially along Richmond Street. So that's one of the very contentious routes, that northern leg of the project. And a lot of folks say that because it's bus rapid transit, it's using the roadway and, could be held up by that train, that it's really not going to be rapid at all, and certainly prone to stoppages in that area. Of course, there's sort of the usual chatter that you hear around a transit project, right? What is the construction going to be like, both for drivers and businesses along the routes?
Right.
What is the expropriation or the land needs going to be? What sort of houses are in the path? There was even a large contingent and a lot of chatter about trees, marking the trees that were going to be in the way. So, it's certainly divisive here. You hear a lot of anti-BRT sentiment, especially heating up now, in the campaign. And I guess the last thing I would say is just that it is really interesting to have such an ultra-local issue dominating a campaign. I mean, people care about lots of other things as well. It's not as if we're only talking about BRT, but, in an election where you are constantly hearing usually about jobs, the economy, things that aren't exactly under that municipal umbrella, how much can your councillor really create jobs in your neighborhood?
Right.
It's interesting to have a project like this where, it is local, and it very much will be decided by potentially the next council. So, it's interesting to see that. And I think that does also play into the amount that we're talking about bus rapid transit and, the frequency with which BRT comes up at debates, because people know, the people they elect on October 22nd are going to be the ones deciding the fate of that project.
And you're right about people down here sort of being able to understand the debate, because I think in the 2014 election, there are a lot of people running for the chair of Waterloo Region or Waterloo Mayor who were running on the platform of either slowing down LRT development or outright canceling it. And it seemed like that election, just as an outside observer, it seemed like that election was a referendum on LRT. Mm-hmm. And of course, 4 years later, it's ready. It's practically ready to go. Just it needs the trains from Bombardier. So,
yeah, well, the Londoners feel for the KW folks who are waiting and waiting. I know they do, and I do too. It is really interesting, and I think it's absolutely a referendum. We had a lot of calls to just specifically put BRT on the ballot as a referendum, and I think a lot of people were saying, there's really no need to do that because the entire election is going to be that referendum.
Right, exactly.
So that's certainly true. And I think it speaks a lot to sort of the vision of this council. We talked a lot about the big turnover in 2014. And the folks you have around the council horseshoe now are, as I said, they're really interested in this city building mandate, right? How do we develop London? What's our vision over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years? And, what do we want the city to look like? And I think there is quite a line down the middle of London voters. A lot of people care about that, and they care about, leaving this city and what state they're going to leave it in for their kids and grandkids. But there's another sort of segment of the voting population that really doesn't want their council looking at dreaming big about, you know, those sorts of city building projects. They want, you know, kind of the steady as she goes government that deals with the garbage pickup that fills your potholes quickly. You know, we have a lot of debate over compost pickup. Are we ever going to get a green bin program, clearing snow, you know, kind of those local government basics. And they just want that done correctly. They don't want all of these, you know, dreams about rapid transit or, you know, we have a pedestrian friendly street that's going in right through our downtown. And those are often some of the projects that are named when folks who are not so pleased with this council are kind of looking at the totality of their accomplishments.
It's a situation that sounds very familiar to me.
I'm sure. That's right. I guess it's the story everywhere, right?
But yeah.
It's just really interesting to see that play out kind of framed around this one issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's about rapid transit, but it's really about a lot more. I think it just really speaks to that idea of vision and, you know, what sort of vision do you want your local government to have for your city?
Well, the thing that seems to be setting London apart in this election is the ranked choice voting and having a referendum on that. Can you talk about, is there a lot of excitement over this? I mean, we've talked about there seems to be a lot of excitement in terms of the mayor's race, but is this particular energizing people in a way that maybe a municipal election wouldn't? Is there a strong lobby for these changes?
Well, that's really interesting, Adam, because I've never thought about it that way, but I would have to say no. I don't think it's exciting people, which is a little bit odd because you know, London is sort of trailblazing, but at least from my perspective, what I hear is a lot of folks who are opposed, who think it's kind of ridiculous, frankly silly, and you know, sort of that idea of why would London go down this path. You know, it's certainly going to take a lot of work from the elections office, the city clerk. You know, there are some concerns about how is voting going to go, what does voting day look like, will people understand the system, and you know, we also are hearing about the way that it will change voting day in the election as a whole. We're expecting not to have results the night of, at least for any race that goes into several rounds. Of course, with the ranked choice voting, you have to get 50% or more of the vote. So it may take several rounds with your second and third choice votes being redistributed. Anyway, so that's interesting. I would say there are some people, of course, that support the idea and think that it makes the system more fair. I think that's really what you hear from supporters, right? That even if your first choice candidate doesn't win, your ballot is still counted. It's not spoiled, you know, after that first candidate is knocked off the list.
Right.
So, you know, gives people more of a stake. But there, as I say, there's a lot of concern about how is this going to roll out. And then I think there's quite a large percentage of the population, too, that really doesn't care. So maybe they kind of know there's a change coming, but they haven't really looked at what is ranked choice voting, ranked ballots, and what that will mean for them.
So this is like an all or nothing, right, proposition, where if it doesn't get a majority support, then there will not be ranked ballots in 2022.
Oh, actually, so London is different. I know there are a couple of communities having the referendum, but we, our council actually decided that ranked ballots will go ahead. So we are using that in this 2018 election, and there's no, you don't have to, of course, so a voter can go in and just rank their top choice.
Okay.
Put a number one beside the candidate they want. But yeah, it's in place and we are using it. There is the option to rank one, two, three, your top three candidates for this election.
I know there are a lot of there are a lot of electoral reform advocates here in Guelph who would be disappointed if this was not the raging success they are hoping it would be, because for people who are proportional representation advocates, you know, the single transferable ballot is kind of the low hanging fruit of electoral reform, and it's like the simplest way, and it I'm sure it's probably disappointing to hear that there are some Londoners who are concerned that even that muddies the water, that complicates things too much for them.
Right. It is interesting because I think what we generally hear, and I've talked to a lot of experts about this, is that, you know, once people know that this is the system and once they sort of turn their minds to that, it's pretty easy to catch on, right? Mm-hmm. You literally write a one, a two, and a three beside your top three candidates. So it's not that it's so complicated, but I think there's a lot of fear surrounding, you know, people who show up on voting day and get their ballot. It's going to be a bigger ballot. It looks a little bit different and just are overwhelmed. You know, they didn't really understand what the change would mean and, you know, will it affect that? Or, you know, folks who are maybe older have trouble seeing the ballot. Right. I mean, there's all kinds of concerns. But I think when it really comes down to it, you know, it is a fairly simple system. You can like it or hate it, but hopefully, you know, we will see some success with that. And again, you don't have to rank three choices. I know there's people here in this newsroom who have said, listen, you know, I'm not doing that ranked ballot thing. I'm going to pick my top choice. I don't want to vote for anyone else. I'm going to put a one beside one candidate and you know, that's my ballot. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I, of course, there's a lot of eyes on London, right? A lot of people are looking to see how does this go. And I imagine that the folks in Guelph who are pushing for that sort of change will be keeping a close eye on the results and how it goes down here.
I want to talk about the job for a minute because I think it's not a well-kept secret that there are issues in the newspaper business and issues in the media generally, you know, dwindling resources. But, you know, the news flow is the same as it ever was. And so from your perspective, covering the City Hall beat, you got 14 mayoral candidates, 14 wards, however many candidates that all works out to. How is your workflow? You know, are you feeling overwhelmed? Are you managing to find a way to sort of make it through and find the things that are going to be make the difference to the voters that read you?
Oh, well, that's interesting. You know, I think we're just sort of getting rolling here because I think the reality of the situation is that really people aren't paying attention until after Labor Day. So we're still sort of on that first half, but it's definitely going to be an intense 6 weeks. I think it is really exciting, you know, a lot of what we see in the lead up or, you know, the summer months as, you know, the campaigns are kind of getting rolling. It is exciting. There's sort of that sense of adrenaline getting you through certain days and some of those long days with debates in the evening. But yeah, it's an exciting time to be covering City Hall is what I'm trying to say. And certainly there are challenges. There are always challenges, but I have a really great team and a lot of really good mentors here who have great ideas, bring a lot of energy, help me navigate those challenging times. And yeah, I think, you know, we've tried to do our best to really focus for people and share with them, you know, who are these people that are running and that are looking for your vote? What do you need to know about them? And, you know, sort of balancing that, too, with the chance for the candidates to tell their own stories. Not to plug our site, but if you go to lfpress.com, you know, right in our banner, we have a City Hall election tab and candidate surveys where we put out, you know, a certain set of questions to every single candidate who's running for a council seat or for the mayor's race. So it's interesting to see a lot of people did read those and it really got a little bit of buzz on social media and I wasn't quite expecting that, but I think it helps for people to have a platform to go and see, you know, ordinary people answering some ordinary questions, you know, kind of cut through the noise and hear what their candidates have to say about sort of the very basic topics, you know, what sets them apart, what do they think about BRT. So yeah, it's interesting to see. Obviously, you know, that took a lot of legwork, but I'm not really doing any intense analytical reporting, right? I'm just slapping in what the answers that I got or, you know, many candidates who chose not to answer that survey, and I think that's very telling as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I guess just keeping that balance, and I would never claim to do a perfect job. There are a lot of people in this newsroom helping me out, and yeah, we do the best we can to kind of distill for voters, you know, what do you need to know? Who are these people? And hopefully give them some context and the expert perspective about what it all means.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to explain London to an ordinary Guelphite today.
Oh, Adam, thanks so much for having me. It's really interesting to see, you know, what's different between the races here and in Guelph and what's really transcends, you know, geographic boundaries. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed chatting. And thanks really for thinking of me and for thinking of what's going down here in London.
And once again, that was Megan Stacey, a reporter and multimedia journalist for the London Free Press, and you can read her work every day at lfpress.com. London, like Guelph, will go to the polls on October 22nd. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. And if you're interested in the Guelph candidates for the municipal election, you should be downloading the Open Sources podcast for the next couple of weeks, because we'll have short interviews with council candidates and hour-long interviews with the mayoral candidates. And remember, that is posted every Monday. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to Guelph Politico anytime by going to Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.